welcome to Worlds Apart. The conflict in Iran is still far from over, but the Israeli military establishment is increasingly worried about another big enemy, this time Turkey, which allegedly is set on increasing its influence in the Middle East, particularly in the niches left open by the weakened Iran. With Israel's security concerns or expansionist appetites seemingly unabating, what could the new regional balance look like? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Mehmet Ozkan, a professor of international relations at the Turkish National Defense University. Professor Ozkan, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for being available.
Thank you for having me.
Now, we are recording this interview after the failed U.S.-Iranian talks in Pakistan, which for a few days at least have cooled the barrage of rockets across the Middle East. Do you think this lull has a chance of being prolonged permanently, or do you think it's just a moment of calm before the next storm?
I think this war will continue because the issues is much more complicated now if you look at 40 days ago. In the beginning, it was only a regime change in Iran. Now, if you have the state of Hormuz and other issues as well, so it's more complicated now. It become an issue of ego as well at the same time from both sides. So, I mean, I expect some lower tension as we see today. But frankly, you know, from the beginning of the war, I expected this war continue in a way. It's likely to end up like war in Ukraine, that will continue. Yes, there will be some effort to solve it, but it seems that it will continue for a while.
Now, I heard you say before in another interview that Trump is trying to maintain rhetorical dominance despite not having operational dominance. And clearly this strategy cannot go on forever. What do you think are his constraints at this juncture?
I think his main concern is to limit the impact of the conflict at regional level. Because in the beginning, yes, Trump had the key role starting the war, but now it's not at the hand of the Trump to end the war, because the war is now out of control. And now the issue of Hormuz is now is a global issue. It's energy issue. It's also a state issue. It's an international law issue. So it's much more complicated. That's why Trump is trying to use the rhetoric to decrease the international impact of this conflict. So nobody will turn and blame Trump for the war even on behalf of Israel. So that's why that is the issue. So what he's saying is something else, and what he's trying to do is something else. Yes, he wants to put an end to the war in a reasonable way. But I think his options are very much limited unless he says, okay, it's enough and I will go back and I will leave it.
Well, as you just said, the Trump administration must be feeling the pressure to unblock the Strait of Hormuz and resume the flow of Gulf energy and fertilizers to the energy markets. And he can try to do it forcefully, or alternatively, he can try to reach a deal with Iran, for example, by agreeing to a $2 million per tanker commission fee, which Iran, by the way, has been insisting on. Both options are clearly very questionable, but which one do you think may seem the lesser evil, or perhaps a better proposition or a better business opportunity to the American president?
I think the key issue in this war is that, you know, Iranians want a guarantee that Iran will not be attacked in coming months or years. I think that guarantee cannot be given by Trump. That is the key issue. It seems that Iranians are ready to at least to compromise to some extent at the Strait of Hormuz. But if the fact that they don't get any guarantee from the United States, they left alone because they know, okay, now we can end the war, and after 3 months or 6 months, if there is another attack, what will we do? So I think it's a reasonable demand from the Iranian side. But I think the fact that they are more talking on the issue of Strait of Hormuz, I think the key issue is more stuck on the who will give the guarantee, whether the United States can give the guarantee with Israel or not. That is the key issue.
Professor, I have had a chance to speak to many Iranian politicians, and while they may be insisting on guarantees, I think it's pretty clear that even if the Americans give those guarantees right now, they may revoke those guarantees later. So do you think that's actually something that the Iranians truly want and truly believe that they can have, as opposed to just using it as a, you know, as a bargaining chip or as a bargaining demand during the negotiations?
I'm sure Iranians can have different perspectives and autonomous, but what Iran is at least several years of not being attacked because Iranian security forces, and after all the decapitations, Iranian state institutions should be reorganized. That's why Iranians need time to rebuild their country, institutions and everything. We have seen this time that Iran needs since the last 3-4 years, since the issue of Gaza started. So, I mean, I think, yes, they may think differently, they may argue differently, which is reasonable at political level. They may focus on Strait of Hormuz, but I think they know at the heart that they need some time and this guarantee will be important. But everybody knows that, you know, United States, they can give guarantee today and tomorrow they can revoke that guarantee. That's also known. That is why what can happen, I mean, I think they focus on if there will be agreement in the Strait of Hormuz, a solution, whatever it happens, I think non-aggression guarantee will be part of that as well. So that's why, I mean, they seems that they are negotiating separate issues, but they seem they are all connected. So I think they will be happy to see that in region, so in tied to the Strait of Hormuz, if the guarantee is revoked, then Strait of Hormuz can be changed again.
I think one of the things that this conflict has demonstrated is that the Iranians have also a lot of leverage. For example, the Strait of Hormuz turns out to be, you know, a very significant leverage tool for them. And turning it into sort of a toll booth may seem like an indirect way of not only granting the Iranians the respect that they want, but also providing them with reparation, which Tehran is another point that Tehran has been insisting on. It feels very businesslike, and a part of me sort of thinks that Trump may be okay with that. But what do you think the rest of the world may think about this quote-unquote settlement? Do you think they will be okay with that?
I think the issue of the Strait of Hormuz is not an issue between Iran and the United States and Gulf countries. It's also, it can also set an example that if everybody, whoever they, wherever they control, if they try to turn everything that's guaranteed under international law as a business, then it can set a different precedent in global politics. That's why, although other countries, they are not saying anything, but I think many countries, they are not very happy with that because before the beginning of the war, the Strait of Hormuz was open and everything was okay. Yes, there were certain regulations, but now, I mean, then it can set different precedent. That's why now nobody's talking a lot because they see how the issue will be evolving between the United States and Iran. But I think if something happens, if the Strait of Hormuz goes different way, I think there will be different discussion at the international level. Also, is an issue that is likely to attract different intervention to the world because of energy dimensions and other dimensions. That's why Iran is keeping that as upper hand, reasonable from their perspective. Mm-hmm.
Now, let's consider another alternative. The United States by now has amassed roughly 50,000 troops in the region. Do you think any ground action is likely?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so because if Iran, I mean, if the United States enters militarily to ground in Iran, it's an unwinnable war. It will be just a mixture of war in Afghanistan and Iraq. So that will be different war and it will be an unending war. I mean, it's impossible to destroy because of the mountain structure of the Iran and everything also structured. But what they can happen, I mean, now they may try to use like targeted operations, which they plan in the case of Venezuela. But even in that case, I mean, United States reach whatever they want because they want to decapitate the many leaders of Iranians and they succeed in that. So what is left? I don't know. So, I mean, I think that is more discourse than the reality. But if they come to that point, if they do that, we will see an unending war again in American foreign policy, and that will continue for many years. And that will be the beginning of the global influence of the American politics in Eastern Europe.
Now, Professor, I heard you say before that regional actors, particularly Turkey and the Gulf states, are not interested in further escalation. But there is Israel, which has done a lot to push this cart off the cliff and perhaps is still very interested in, you know, keeping it going downhill. Whose influence do you think the Trump administration is more amenable to at this juncture? Because, I mean, before this conflict, clearly, you know, Israel had the ears of the Americans, but I think Trump must have learned something over the last 6 or 7 weeks.
Yes, I think Trump has learned his lessons. That's why he's negotiating. That's why he wants to sort of put an end to the war. But what's happening, I mean, from the Israeli perspective, Israel is winning on four grounds. Americans are doing a war that is creating benefits for the United States, for Israel. Israel is winning because Iran is weakening. Israel is winning because Gulf countries are weakening in all sense. Israel is winning because they are doing whatever they want in southern Lebanon. And Israel is winning because in Gaza, nobody's paying attention. So from the Israeli perspective, there is a war that's going on that Israel is only side actor, not the main actor, that all the culpability, I mean, all the blame comes from the United States, but they are winning. Why they insist on not to finish the war and continue to the war and to destroy. I think we use the utmost influence in the United States that Trump will not do any negotiation in the end of the war. But I think Trump has got his lesson, because if Trump continues in that sense, what can happen, as you know, in November, there is, midterm elections, there are other issues. Also, the opposition to the war is growing. None of the NATO countries are coming support to United States, as Trump is calling to NATO support. It will not come. So Trump is feeling alone in this war, and it's an unbeatable war. So I think he's got his lesson. Let's see how he will maneuver to go out of this juncture.
Now, let me know if you disagree, but it seems to me, at least, that Iran is banking not only on keeping the Americans in, but also on keeping the region fragmented and preventing any new re-engagements or realignments, particularly among the Sunni Muslim countries. Is it likely to have its way?
Hey, look, Iran might have an interest to, same with Israel, Israelis might have an interest that the weakened Gulf countries would be their interest. That's understandable. But eventually, you know, it's very clear that, you know, when the regime of Bashar al-Assad collapsed in the 8th of December 2024, it was the end of the proxy wars in the Middle East. Now, with the war in Iran, in the Middle East, it is the end of the small countries in terms of security structure. Now, we need a security structure in the Middle East. Naturally, all the Sunni countries, I mean, very interesting, they will come together, they will try to organize a security structure. And eventually, Iran will be part of it, because, and that security structure is not designed against Iran. It will be mostly designed against any Israeli aggression that we have seen in the last several years. So Iran should be happy that Middle Eastern countries, they are coming together to put forward a security structure that is not 100% dependent on the United States or the other countries. That's more homegrown, regional-owned process. I think that will be benefit to Iran as well. I mean, but Iran, Iran might interpret differently. Of course, Iran think that, I mean, perhaps the weakened Gulf countries will be their interest. But I think the politics in the Gulf countries has changed. Security sector will be totally discussed, even after, especially after the war. I mean, there will be no security structure in the Middle East. I think Turkey will be one of the key countries to shape these developments incomingly.
Okay, Professor, we have to take a very short break right now, but we will be back to the discussion in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
There's no end in sight over how you're going to continue to destroy the earth.
It's the case of the madness of the people.
I tried to go to the gym, but I'm certainly not ready to fight Russia.
This is all so absurd.
This is third world lunacy. Brainwashing.
As Ursula von der Leyen likes to say, we have the tools.
Why don't we just start with stability and business deals?
What planet are we living on, man?
We have very good propaganda in our press here in Europe.
I think we don't know the aftermath.
Anytime that you're not allowed to ask questions, you should ask all of the questions.
The more questions asked, the better the answers will be.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Mehmet Ozkan, a professor of international relations at the Turkish National Defense University. Professor, on the issue of regional realignment, I'm seeing a lot of publications in Israeli media about how a Sunni regrouping in the region is potentially threatening for Israel, even though one would think that it's a natural development, especially in the side of the Shia crescent being punctured. It seems like Israel is becoming increasingly hegemonic, if not absolutist, in how it defines its security. What do you think about it?
As I said, the Middle East, we need a new security structure, and it is slowly taking place. And the war in Iran actually provoked more these countries to pay that attention towards that direction. That's why even these mediation efforts between Turkey, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and Pakistan is naturally bringing these countries for the destruction of the war that's happening in the region. And of course, it is very normal that they take joint action against any security threat, either coming from inside or from outside. So now they are also testing the water with these developments. Yes, there were some developments between Saudi Arabia and Pakistan. Then later on, there were discussions whether Turkey will be participating, even it was discussed in the media. But so far, there is nothing. I think practice is shaping security dimensions in the Middle East and the theory. We should not have any perspective on this. We don't know, because we don't know what will be the nature of the security structure. We don't know what will be the extent of the cooperation in terms of security between these countries. But everybody has their own issues. I mean, Egypt has different issues, Saudi Arabia has different issues, Turkey has different issues, Pakistan has different issues. But it is very natural that, you know, as the countries now, they trust less on the Western security provision to the region. And it's very normal that they look for a homegrown alternatives. Of course, that does not mean that they will disconnect their relations with the West. For example, Turkey's alliance with NATO membership or Gulf countries' relation with the United States and UK, that will be there. But now they are looking for an alternative or complementary security structure they will be establishing. And that is not designed against Israel. That is designed exactly that if any threat coming out from inside and out, not indicating any country. Of course, I mean, Israel is mighty, but that alignment will not be against Israel or another country unless they create a security problem in the region.
Now, speaking about Turkey in particular, a number of high-profile Israeli establishment figures, including former prime minister, called your own country the next big threat. What do you make of it?
From Turkey, there is no response. We're just following, because I don't see any conflict between Turkey and Israel at this point as realistic. It is totally unrealistic because Turkey is part of NATO, and any attack to Turkey, that will be attack to the NATO, and it will be complicated. And also, there is no reason that Israel and Turkey should have a hot war at this point. But what can happen for the influence in the developments in the region, that is very natural. Turkey and Israel will try to shape the developments in Syria, in Lebanon, and different places, and also other countries. At the same time, Turkey is also competing with other countries, with Iran, with Gulf countries, with Egypt. So that is that political competition for the sphere of influence is very natural and normal. But I don't expect any hot war. Yes, they try to discuss this. They try to blame Turkey. But in Turkey, we are just watching, and we are not really paying attention so much because at this point, it is not very realistic.
Now, I agree with you that kinetic conflict perhaps is not likely at this point of time. Israel has a lot on its plate, but perhaps some proxy fighting is quite possible. And I know that following the collapse of the Assad regime in Syria, Turkey has invested a lot diplomatically and militarily in the new leadership. Do you think it was a sound geopolitical investment given the Israeli inroads into the Syrian territory?
In the issue of Syria, there is an unspoken alignment between Turkey and the United States that Syria should be safe, should be self-sufficient in terms of security and in terms of providing security itself and not being a threat to any country, including Israel. So that's why in last 1 year, more than a year now, developments in Syria has become much, much better, much, much advanced compared to many expectations. So yes, Israel tried to break that line, but I think between relations between Israel and the United States also, they came to the conclusion that, you know, a Syria that is not a threat to Israel is better than anything. Yes, there are some issues in Syria. I think now they came to that point. Also, what can happen, the Syria is a hot point. It has been a hot point. Now, Gulf countries, Iran, Russia, and other countries, including, for example, new regime has in a good relations, public relations with Russia. So I think now the Syrian regime is trying to normalize its relations and not to being a threat to anyone. So yes, there could be some little friction, but I doubt that there will be a proxy war, but I believe we came to the end of the proxy war in the Middle East.
Well, Professor, with all due respect, I think the Israeli army has effectively banned the Syrian military from moving anywhere from to the south of Damascus and has sought to impose very, you know, solid constraints on the Turkey-friendly forces in Syria, while being, I think, fully aware of the Turkish security sensibilities in Syria. How do you think President Erdogan and the Turkish military and perhaps security establishment are taking it? That seems like pushing of the envelope a little bit too far, too close to Damascus.
First of all, Syria is an independent country, and that's a Syrian issue. And Turkey is ready to help. Turkey is trying to collaborate, but Turkey will not go to any war on behalf of Syria. That's a different issue, unless, I mean, there is cooperation differently. So that's why Turkey is closely following what's happening, but that's all part of negotiations. That now they are speaking, Americans involved and others involved. These tactical maneuvers, I don't see that will create a proxy war that we have seen in the past. Yes, Turkey is following very closely because Turkey wants a safe and secure Syria, a self-sufficient Syria, a self-sustainable Syria, in a politically and also secure device. Yes, now everybody knows that Syria does not have a control at the airspace, which will be developing newly. And there are a lot to be invest in Syrian army and Syrian military structure. But I think Turkey is just following. I mean, Turkey will not be provoked by any Israeli aggression in Syria. Yes, they are following. But I don't expect that we will be back to the proxy wars as it was in the past. I think now we entered a new chapter in the Middle East and also in the case of Syria.
Now, while we are on this issue of Syria, many Turkish and Western analysts were somewhat dismissive of the Russian decision to stop its support for the Assad regime. And many of them characterized that as a geopolitical defeat. But I can tell you here in Moscow, I think many people are very relieved now that Moscow is not engaged in that country anymore, that we are far off from this ever-expanding fire in the Middle East. Looking back, do you think that was a sound decision on the part of Moscow to disengage when it saw that perhaps, its investments were not paying off very well?
I think Russia made a very smart decision that when it saw that things were out of the control, things were transforming, and Syria has changed its side. And now with the Syrian regime, there is relations. There are several visits that from Syrian side to Russia. I think Russia is there. Russia will be an actor there. But the scope and the extent of the relations, perhaps it will never be like in the past. It was in the past a guaranteed, it was a state. It was regime of Bashar Assad. It was not a self-sustainable state in the past, unless there was Iranian and Russian support. Everybody knows it. But now there's a normalized relations that we will see between Syria and Russia. And Turkey would be happy to see that relations. And also Syrians are happy to see that relations that they are investing. I think it's been both beneficial for Russia and Russia in the Middle East. I think that has been a smart move and smart decision, I think, from this point.
I was surprised by how muted both the Russian and the Chinese response to the U.S.-Israeli attack on Iran was, even though both Moscow and Beijing have a keen interest in seeing Iran survive, both as a state and as a key actor in the Middle East, as a member of BRICS, etc. How do you interpret the very limited, at least for now, very limited engagement?
What I see, I think there is engagement, but engagement seems to us limited. Perhaps there is different cooperation, but if there is a containment of the Strait of Hormuz by the United States, then we may see much more third actors involvement in the war. As you know, in any war, in the first month, each country, they look at the conflict, how this conflict can be solved, mediations and other things. But when 1 month is over, countries start to look at the conflict, how can we benefit from this conflict? Now, we're at the second stage of this conflict, war in Iran, and now countries are looking at differently. Now they see how Americans are in the state of Hormuz and how other countries are responding, how Iran is has become much more resilient than the many expectations. So now I think from now on, I wouldn't be surprised if I see a little more support and involvement, including the fact that the Islamabad talks has itself manifested that the Chinese influence in that sense, yes, Pakistan has become a key country, but it's very normal that, you know, China-Pakistan relation has at highest level, and there has been Chinese influence there as well. So I think we will see in coming months if the truce period does not produce a wider solution, perhaps we will see more different actors' involvement in this conflict. And of course, that will make it complicated.
Now, Professor Özkan, given how disruptive geopolitics has been in recent years, and particularly recent months, I wonder if both Russia and China believe that they're better served by pulling back or perhaps, trying to exert their influence from a distance rather than expanding their presence on the ground. At the very least, it seems to, you know, help one preserve their own resources in these very turbulent, unpredicted and resource-consuming times. What do you think? Do you think it's a strategy?
If there was no war in Ukraine, for example, let's say there is no war in Ukraine, I think today relations between Europe and Russia would have been excellent, would have been very good level because of the energy crisis and everything, literally, you know. Perhaps, I mean, those countries, they might bet that if the conflict deepens in the Middle East, eventually there will be mode of communication between Europe and Russia in terms of energy. That is inevitable. So I think in coming months, we will see lots of surprise as well. I wouldn't be surprised if I see like Bruce Lee music opened again and different dimensions. What is that? The difference is there. But still, you know, the niche-based corporations, we should not omit. So I think his whole dimension, but everybody's looking now in coming 10 days now, 9-10 days, how the truce will continue, whether it will be extended, whether it will produce something viable, sustainable, or whether the other parties will return to the war again. I think now, then the countries will have differently. I see lots of options. Also, even from this conflict, each country now, they are contemplating how many days they can survive without oil. I mean, how many days they have the reserve for the oils. So also, you know, when now they are when they expire, when they come to the end of that point, countries will look at different options. Now, as we, I think, I mean, now it is around $90 or something per barrel. But if the prices go up, who will be winning? I mean, Russia will be winning, and Iran will be winning naturally. So I think there are lots of things at the stake, and everybody's looking at different options. I mean, I think there is also a new channel can be opened between Europe and Russia.
Okay, well, I think one is clear is that everything is unclear. Professor Özkan, it's been great talking to you. Thank you very much for this chance.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again next week on Worlds Apart.